Okay, so I'm Rick Hansen, and this is July 1st, 2015, and I really want to talk tonight about love as a practice, or even more kind of fundamentally or profoundly, who are we practicing for? And as you know, I've been gone for a number of weeks, and as part of that time, I got to have some involvement with a Tibetan monastery, Tibetan Buddhist monastery in Scotland, of all places. It's the first and largest Tibetan monastery in Europe, called Sami Ling. And, you know, it was a very touching experience for me, and it's given me some, I think, good things to think about. So I want to introduce this topic and then open it up for discussion by telling you that I'm in the middle now of a fairly complex, strange, sort of out of the blue mess in my larger extended family system. And it's one of those classic messes. It's partly why Jean-Paul Sartre said, as you know, hell is other people, right? You know, and so there's someone who thinks I wronged that person. I think I've been wronged in a lot of ways. And you have third parties with their own views. It's the usual extended family system mess. And part of what's made it really complicated is that it involves things that happened nearly 2 years ago that I really didn't know anything about until about 5 months ago. So for myself, I noticed that, you know, in terms of kind of standard practice, I'm doing the right things. You know, I'm noticing my own reactions. I'm trying not to pour gasoline on the fire. I'm trying to look at this from different perspectives, have compassion for the other people. And that's, you know, that's going okay, right? Good standard stuff to do. But I'm noticing that when I take another step, something really kind of remarkable starts to happen. When I shift into basically orienting to the situation from a primarily simple and loving place where my primary emphasis is in a softness and a yielding and a finding a lovingness, even though the part of my mind that wants to stick up for me and make the case for how I've been done dirt and this is unjust and yeah, okay, and the big mosaic here, maybe one of the tiles with my name on it ain't so hot, but there's a lot of other crud in that mosaic. Yeah, you know, notwithstanding that inner voice, I just notice more and more when I kind of orient to this, like including with the third parties involved, from a place of just, oh wow, I'm so sorry you're suffering here. I really want to know what I did that contributed to that. You know, I really hope to heal this. I will do whatever I can to repair this here, to make amends. When I do that, when I fall into that place, it does not have the feeling of being a doormat, which is really interesting. It just doesn't. It's kind of simple. And also, that little 0.5% guardian, inner guardian that's watching is telling me that that stance is the safest possible stance for me to take. It's the least likely to be static and therefore push againstable. There's kind of like nothing to push against when we're in that place, right? And also, it's kind of the safest because it's the least likely to add more mass to, you know, the mess, the story, the complication, the entanglement, the position. Have you ever noticed that as soon as you offer your position, people form a position around your position, right? It makes it kind of static, it reifies things, it adds mass to it. And what's been really interesting for me is to explore how, what a refuge that place feels like for me. And I kind of notice that it's when I'm in standard mode, I start feeling contracted, even though I'm practicing, even though I'm having insight into myself, even though I'm kind of seeing the bigger picture, contraction. But when I let go into this place, I'm just kind of a simple, tender, sweet, simple lovingness that is reserving my internal rights over time to see what's actually the case, that contraction falls away. And so I want to offer a quote here and then invite you to think about some similar situation yourself, you know, where maybe there's kind of a wrangle. And I want to be really clear, I'm not talking about letting other people hurt you or take advantage of you. I actually also noticed, and I observed this in other people who live from this place and kind of operate in this place, that it actually makes us stronger when we do say, pardon me, like I'm not comfortable with what's happening here. I'm feeling, honestly, like this is not something I want to be part of right now. I'm being mistreated in some way. It's actually more powerful when we come from this place. So there's a lot of teaching, actually, in Buddhism about this place. And I want to just read a couple quotes, have you do a little practice, and then take it to an even deeper level and see what you think about that. So a couple of quotes. One quote is from what's called the Sutta Nipata. It's an early collection of Buddhist teachings. It says, as I am, so are others. As others are, so am I. That's interdependence, right? We're all in the same boat. Having thus identified self and others, harm no one, nor have them harmed. There's kind of a simplicity, you know, in giving over to that stance. It's like sometimes I feel like I can hold it in my mind, in my heart, authentically for about 3 seconds, you know? And then I know about it, but I don't feel it, really. But with practice, we can give ourselves over to it more and more and more. And I think we all know what that place is, where we're just really not there to harm anyone. We're really there authentically to find out what happened, take responsibility, be healing, be loving, really hold other people in our heart. Have compassion for them, wish them well, be sorry for them, not in a condescending sense, but a genuine kind of sense. Or another quote here is, train yourself in doing good that lasts and brings happiness. Cultivate generosity. Tom was talking about one form of generosity, and there's so many others. Cultivate generosity, the life of peace, and a mind of boundless love. Hear that phrase a lot, a mind of boundless love, a love without limit. It doesn't stop at Dick Cheney or your relatives or your neighbor, you know, or your teenager who is really a piece of work right now. I speak from some personal experience there. Not currently, but it's okay. I was a piece of work too, but anyway. All right. Okay, so far, so I want to just invite you right now, if you like. We'll be quiet for a couple minutes. Think of someone that, or some situation, maybe it's at work, maybe it's a family member, a relative, perhaps in your extended family. Maybe it's a person that's not in your life anymore, but when you think of them, you still, the needle moves. If you ran into them walking down the street, it'd be an interesting experience. Just pick someone. And for, you know, a couple of minutes here, see if you can find your way into what would it be like to just give yourself over to, strictly, a kind of a loving, simple orientation to them. Not letting yourself be harmed, not giving up your own take on the total truth of the situation. Just like, imagine maybe how Thich Nhat Hanh would orient to this person. Or someone else in your life. It just seems like a very simple and loving being. Or that sense of that capacity inside yourself, giving over to it, being lived from that place. Just exploring what that might be like and what differences it might make, minimally for you in your own experience, and perhaps for others as well. You might feel your way into what kind of letting go would create more room for that wellspring of love. Okay. How was that? Perhaps a few people, briefly, if you don't mind, just for everybody to have many voices here. How was that? Anything you observed or took away? Yeah.
I needed to do myself. Because there wasn't anything serious enough.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure there was. I was so caught up in what was going on in my head that I just shifted into what would I have to do to relate better to me.
Oh, you were loving toward yourself. Okay,
yes.
Great.
And
that's powerful.
It really worked.
That's what really great.
I'm listening to you. What would you have to let go of? I'd have to give myself some space. I'd have to let go of control. I'd have to have compassion when I make a presentation.
Yeah.
I'd have to. And it worked.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. A few others? Yeah. What happened?
It was, this process was very difficult for me. I'm experiencing a sense of loss of a close friend. And I thought it was very important for me to not only be passionate, but to speak my truth. And this person was not treating me well, and I told him that I couldn't be his friend until he looked at his anger. He felt that he's projecting a lot of anger. So it was important for me to speak my truth and also take care of myself and try to keep my heart open. And so I'm mourning the loss of a dear friend. And I still love him. You know?
Yeah.
I can't be around
okay.
at this point.
Yeah. And you clearly have a strong feeling of love for him.
I do.
While also taking care of yourself and feeling the realness of the loss, too, right? Yeah. Thank you. other people? Things you saw? Yeah, please.
What I noticed was next to that when I first oriented towards the loving feeling, that what came right behind it was the fear that I have for this person because I got so hurt in the past.
Yeah.
And if I now open myself up to love, the same thing can't happen again. So it was not easy to maintain. Or I wasn't able to maintain the loving feeling at all.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I got that. So overwhelmed by fear, and I want to be really clear. You know, I'm not saying anything about setting ourselves up to be harmed or damaged. And if it's hard for you, whoever you are, to be both, you know, in this place of just a kind of simple, sweet lovingness, if it's hard for you to do that while also being appropriately self-caring with good boundaries, you know, then be careful about the practice. But I actually find for myself that the lovingness, it's really interesting. Then when you're in this lovingness, you kind of don't care what they do. It's not that relevant. And they can't really hurt you. You know, I mean, if they hit you or burn down the house, or that's not going to happen, or hopefully not. But you know, it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of sitting in a really loving place. I'm willing to do everything I possibly can while also noticing that there are fundamental limits to what I can do to create a healing here, you know? And if the causes and conditions are objectively not actually present that support a relationship, I can't change that. I can just be loving and sincere and a virtuous person over here, but if it's just kind of in the larger impersonal network of causes, just not there for this relationship to be a certain way or even happen at all, you know, like, it's not my fault, you know, no blame in a sense. And we have to be careful about using these methods to get feed the ego or get incorporated into our typical self centered perspective. I don't mean it like that. But I do find, interestingly, that this place of a simple lovingness is actually remarkably, it's a great refuge. So you might play around with that and imagine, you know, if I'm in this simple loving place where I feel for you, I feel compassionate or sad that you're suffering. I'm also disengaging because I don't want you to yell at me, right? Or I'm not going to loan you any more money in the future, and whatever. See what that would be like. I don't know. I actually find it's really quite powerful. So, anyway. Yeah, one more person. Abby?
I also had an experience of, yeah, of finding some fear, you know, even within the context of being able to take that loving stance. And as I sunk into, you know, trying to understand that fear, I found that when I was able to thank my protector, thank the part of me that was needing a boundary and needing to trust that I would hold a boundary,
yeah,
in that loving stance, like as if I could love that boundary in myself, then it really softened into me being able to feel much more able to extend that out.
That's great. And I, just to build on what you said there, and what you're saying as well, you got to find your own way into this, you know? And like I've myself, over time, become really quite able to assert myself. You know, I grew up with very invasive, loving, well-intended, but controlling and judgmental and fault-finding parents. And I could, you know, several things could have happened there. And one thing that did not happen is that I did not crack under the pressure. And so, you know, I'm someone who, I think honestly, as a warm-hearted, loving person, it's actually a good balancing for me to find this kind of simple, humble, you know, lovingness place when dealing with people who are problematic in some way. Because I got the assertiveness piece pretty covered. You know, so you might find your own way here. You have to find your own way with this. I'm not saying this is the only way to be, but I just want to really name it and call it out and then kind of take it to a deeper place now, you know. So a deeper question is, why do we practice? And for whose sake do we practice? We practice in many kinds of ways, inside a Buddhist frame or outside a Buddhist frame. We try to be a decent person. We try to become more mindful. We try to develop various inner strengths, skills, relationship skills. We practice. And for sure we do it for ourselves. But it's really interesting, and you might try to explore this if you like. I am. To feel our way into what it's like to practice for other beings. And this is part of the historical trajectory of Buddhism itself. You may know that in the first few hundred years after the Buddha's life and his passing away, there was a lot of emphasis on personal cultivation, the development of personal virtue and morality and restraint, personal meditative concentration, and personal wisdom. In all that, certainly were moral stances toward other people and an appreciation for loving kindness and compassion for other beings. But a lot of that was seen as a process fundamentally of personal development, the epitome of which was the arahant, someone who is personally enlightened and no longer subject to rebirth in that framework. And then, as you probably know again, along came the so-called Mahayana path, particularly around northern India as well as Tibet, that started shifting from the notion of the arahant as the epitome of practice, the final stage, as good as it gets, right, to the notion of the bodhisattva, someone who renounces ultimate liberation, ultimate awakening, until all beings are enlightened. One of the bodhisattva vows is, sentient beings are numberless, infinite. I vow to awaken them all. Wow. Right? So you see this movement from practicing for the sake of this one here, obviously where the sense of personal ego or I is really falling away, but there's still an individual body-mind stream in this life and maybe across multiple lives, practicing for the sake of that one, to a shift of motivation, a shift of frame, to practicing for the sake of others as well, or fundamentally even practicing for their sake most primarily. I'm mostly trained in the early roots of Buddhism, the Theravadan roots. That's the so-called Vipassana, Southeast Asian tradition we're very much part of. Rooted in the Pali canon, Pali, the language of early Buddhism, those fundamental teachings are best guess of what the Buddha was really thinking and talking about. I think that's a phenomenal, phenomenal path, right? I think there's a certain sometime sneering you'd find in Mahayana circles, Tibetan and Zen circles, sneering about the so-called Hinayana, lesser vehicle, where Hina really means meh, ersatz, kind of pathetic, vehicle. And I think it's really unfounded. It's really unfounded. Many, many people who even teach in the Mahayana tradition have almost no understanding of the early teachings of the Buddha, the original profound teachings he drew upon himself for his own awakening and that of so many people around him. So I'm not speaking against the wisdom of those teachings. On the other hand, there have been 2,500 years of evolution. I think it's probably true, as best we gather, that the Buddha himself taught, certainly, for the sake of other people. From a practical standpoint, I invite you into what it feels like to think of at least part of what you do while meditating or studying or learning or listening to me right now as a form of practice, that at least part of what you're doing when you're doing that is for the sake of other beings. Out of compassion for them, being aware of their suffering, you know, practicing to do less harm yourself, also practicing to cultivate that loving, boundless, selfless heart that is so beneficial for other beings. Maybe out of gratitude for beings who have practiced for our sake or who've handed on gifts to you, you know, out of gratitude for them, kind of the cultivating to pass on to others what you've gained so much yourself. What happens in your own practice when you make that shift? Or you might even play around with something I've been doing more and more with just kind of amazing results, to just look at someone on the street or in this room and think to yourself, may you be awakened. What I notice is that it's like an instant circuit breaker of neuroticism. My mind is rippling along, some kind of wrangle, some kind of thing. And I think about anybody, you know, including the people that I'm wrangling in my mind about, you know. May you be enlightened. May you be awakened. May you be truly happy. May you find complete peace. Right? And suddenly feel like, wow, what happens in your mind when you do that? What happens in your mind when you kind of give yourself over to that as an orientation? It's really interesting. There are a couple of quotes I want to offer to you and then see what you think about this as we move to an end here. Okay. But before I do that, I want to say to do this is not really that easy, is it? No. And again, I want to be clear, I'm not talking about being against ourselves or, you know, overlooking our own needs. As you point out, it's really powerful and beautiful to apply this to the little suffering being who has your own name tag, right? But it's really interesting to orient more and more to practice rather than practicing to get over there, to practicing more as a matter of giving over to something powerful and wholesome, even profound, maybe exalted, right? Giving over to love, being lived by love, right? It's very, very powerful. There's a traditional saying, the mind takes its shape from what it repeatedly rests upon, right? I'm talking in a sense about resting your mind upon that which to which you aspire. What do you aspire to? What do you really want to be more and more lived by? And can you let yourself become increasingly accessible to, yielding to, you know, transparent to, whatever it is that you want to be increasingly lived by, lived as? That's a beautiful, right, guiding light in practice. When I was in the middle of a pretty serious wrangle, I looked at this little teaching from the Buddha daily, multiple times a day. It says here, with goodwill for the entire cosmos, cultivate a limitless heart. Above, below, and all around, unobstructed, without hostility or hate. Right? Like giving over to that kind of mind, that mind stream. With goodwill for the entire cosmos, cultivate a limitless heart, above, below, and all around, unobstructed, without hostility or hate. Maybe what I'll do soon is send an email with some of these quotes out, if you like. And then I want to read the last from a woman named Maureen Connor. I just saw this little article from her in Buddha Dharma magazine, and it just kind of blew my mind. So she writes here, as the earth gives us food and air and all the things we need, I give my heart to caring for all others until all attain awakening. For the good of all sentient beings, may loving kindness be born in me. Like, that's her daily practice. Someone asked her, what's your practice? She says, well, my practice is as the earth gives us food and air and all the things we need, I give my heart to caring for all others until all attain awakening. For the good of all sentient beings, may loving kindness be born in me. That's an example of someone's practicing, at least in part, if not entirely, for the sake of others. Okay. See what happens in your own inner laboratory when you explore this territory. Any comments, questions so far? Please.
Well, I guess I have found over the years, my own personal practice.
Yeah.
I endeavor to, through meditation and my practice, to let go of who I am, let go of art, let go of this identity, it also seems to turn the spotlight on me in a way that it brings me back to obsessing about myself a little bit.
Yeah.
But I find that when I practice Tong Ling, for example,
yeah,
extending that loving kindness out, not just to myself, sure, but to others, it's relief. I get away from myself.
Yeah.
It's a big relief.
Thank you. Yeah, that's, I thank you very much. Yeah. No self, no problem, right? Are there? Yeah, oh, good, right.
I may have read it in your book, but I had read that looking at people when I was obsessed about something. And
yeah.
Just, you know, I may be happy.
Yeah.
And it does something profound. And the earlier exercise we did, there's somebody in my extended family who had an alcohol problem. And in the beginning, I was trying to help and fix, and he was being abusive to my mom, and I was trying to, and it was like, and going to sort of what you said of, I honor your path and I can't change it and all I can do is love you, was profoundly peaceful. And it sort of made me accept whatever would happen. And he and I actually ended up getting a lot closer in the process, but it was a really profound shift of letting go and just loving him.
So great, thank you. Great, yeah, please.
I wasn't sure if the gentleman over there,
he said Tong Len.
Oh, okay, Tong Len. Is that like
meta? A really brief summary. Tell me if this would be different, Art, than what you take. Briefly, it's a Tibetan practice or different versions of it. You know, a kind of fundamental version is first you start by fueling yourself one way or another, including by giving yourself over to what might be called a deity figure in that tradition, or perhaps just simply giving over to a loving kindness. And then basically one common variation of it is to take into oneself, having been fueled and even identified with the deity figure, very important part, taking into oneself the suffering of others. Like to be so selfless and so loving, like I would take into myself your pain. You have to obviously be fortified and you have to understand why you're doing this, why you're doing this. But it's a very powerful practice of personal transformation as well. That's a fair summary?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Excuse me. There's a second part. You have to give back loving kindness to them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Absolutely. You take it in and you give back loving kindness to them.
Take in the bad and give out the
good. Yeah, that's right. In this really circular, powerful way. Yeah, it's a really amazing practice. Okay. Yeah. And if I could just, it's easy to get complex about this. And I find more and more, what is it like to just find your own way to feel, you know, given over to something that's loving or caring? What is a piece that's available for you in that process? Yeah. Okay. Right there.
Yeah.
also might have read it in one of your books. I started practicing about 6 months ago, especially in the morning when I'm going, walking now, wherever I'm going, catching someone's eyes.
Yeah.
So whenever I pass someone, I look at them in the eye with a smile and try to make a connection, and it does wonders. You could see the light.
Yeah.
Often, it's I don't, for me, I'm not saying, may I give you loving kindness, but I'm just making the connection, and I see what it does, and it makes me feel great,
yeah.
And it makes, I can see it makes people, it's a connect. I think
yeah.
So many people just need to connect.
Yeah.
You know, much to my son's dismay, why are you always saying hello to everybody?
Right. My kids are much the same.
Teenagers.
Yeah. And you can, I just want to just underline again, this fundamental, what happened, just play with it, like there's some kind of odd power somehow or transformation in, may you be awakened. Yeah, like that really, like all the way. And one thing that I noticed when I first started doing that a little bit was that I would look at people and my first thought was, no way you're going to be awakened. You know, like, you're like, you haven't a clue, or you're just like a completely, like, you've never thought about anything in your entire, whatever, you know, all my stereotypes, you know, or opinions. I was kind of startled by all the stuff that surfaced. It's like, it was a bunch of flock of crows, you know, leaping off of a tree when you, like, I don't know, set off a firecracker or something, just like, what? And then you go past that, and you suddenly get to, everyone is to be awakened. Anyone could be. Awaken. This path is for everyone. You know, freedom from suffering is for everyone. It's really interesting. So I encourage you just explore that as well. Maybe one more person and we'll sit quietly for a minute. Anybody else? Yeah.
Just a clarification. The concept of may you be awakened, is that the same sort of concept as may you not suffer, may you find happiness, may you find joy, etc.? Is that, or is it a distinct thing that you're saying?
For me, the idea of may you be awakened is really like there's nothing beyond that.
Right.
And, you know, which I would think of as, for me at least, it has a different, it has had a different impact on me in my own inner practice than, you know, may you be happy, may you not suffer, may you be safe, may you be healthy, may you live with ease, you know, things like that. That's great, great stuff. And I'm all for that. I'm not speaking against it. But there's something about, you know, just the radical possibility, whatever that is for you, mm-hmm. like the ultimate possibility for human beings, sentient beings in a sense, like whatever, may you be God realized. May you, you know, whatever, you know, may you be enlightened. May you be all the ultimate way. Even if I'm not, whoa, twist the blade. But how powerful that is. And something, I don't know, just I find there's something in me that just, it's instant freedom from neurosis. It's instant freedom from ordinary contraction to just like, wow, there's something very powerful about it, you know. And, to think also, literally right now, at this deli counter where I'm asking you to put more mayonnaise on my sandwich, you know, or I'm in this situation at work, or I'm just driving down the freeway, may I be of service to your awakening? May I be a part of your own path of healing and ultimate development? That really does something. Okay. Enjoy the experiments. And we'll see you in 2 weeks, okay? Just play around with this. See what you find. And we'll talk about it. So let's sit for a minute. Let this kind of reverberate. May all beings be awakened. See you in 2 weeks.
Oh, I have a question.